calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, March 6th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:32. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Schauer, and myself, Chair Hughes. Please silent or turn off your cell phones. Thank you to Nancy Hemingway and Eileen Keim and Mr. Witt for assisting us today. Before I review today's agenda, I'd like to sincerely thank all committee members for sharing their ideas on Senate Bill 35. My staff and I are currently vetting those ideas and will contact each office regarding the committee's path forward in drafting the committee substitute. Once we have the committee substitute and have introduced the new working document, I will set a date for amendments. Thank you again to committee members for their thoughtful input. It is greatly appreciated. And let the record reflect that Senator Keel has joined us. We have two items on today's agenda. First, the committee will take up consideration of the governor's appointments. That will be followed by public testimony for those appointments. And following that agenda item, the committee will continue our review of Senate Bill 34, which we started on Monday. And before we begin consideration, however, of the governor's appointments, I would like to ask committee members to please keep your questions and comments focused on the appointee and the mission of the board or commission to which the appointee is being considered. We're going to table all philosophical and positional speech making, mine included. I'd also like to point out that asking for appointee support or advocacy for specific legislation or policy proposals could be construed as quid pro quo, and such questions or comments are inappropriate and will not be permitted. And as always, concise questions and thoughtful brevity are the order of the day and are much appreciated. I also want to say that it doesn't matter if a committee hears an appointment or not, the person's name will still be referred to a joint session of the House and Senate for a confirmation vote. If an appointment is controversial, that's even more of a reason to have a committee vetting process. We have all the appointees appearing via the off-net today, so I'd just like to ask all of our appointees, please stay online through the public testimony period so that if committee members have any follow-up questions for you, we can ask them and you'll be available. So first online, we will speak to Mr. Dave Parker, who is being considered to the Alaska Judicial Council. The mission of the Alaska Judicial Council is to screen and nominate judicial applicants, evaluate the performance of judges, and make evaluation information and recommendations available to the voters, and conduct studies and make recommendations to improve the administration of justice. Mr. Parker, welcome. Please place your name on the record and tell us why you would like to serve on the Alaska Judicial Council and what you have to offer the council in our state. And before
you
begin,
Can you hear me?
Yes, but before you place your name on the record, I'd like to recognize that Senator Michiki has joined the committee. So, Mr. Parker, please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My name is David Parker. I am currently a Wasilla, Alaska resident. I have a previous background in law enforcement. I was with the Anchorage Police Department for approximately 18 years and served in a variety of roles there, mainly in the detective area, especially in crimes against children, sexual assault, child homicides. I ultimately became a sergeant and was responsible for the restart of our SART program, our Sexual Assault Response Team program, with the Department of Health and Human Services and Bev Woolley, who was working for the municipality at that time. I ultimately became the sergeant of the Crimes Against Children Unit and was able to, with the help of Mayor Mark Begich at the time and Corey Bryant from Providence Hospital, able to develop the multidisciplinary center. And I became a lieutenant, and I had the Crimes Against Children Unit, Sexual Assault, Cyber Crimes, and Vice Units. And ultimately, many of you remember, I became the face of APD, the Public Information Officer, when Chief Rob Hume appointed me to that. That was a very interesting time for a cop to become a PIO. During my time with the police department, I served on the Standing Together Against Rape Board, on the Board for Victims for Justice. I was on the Child Fatality Review Board with the Medical Examiner's Office, and had a variety of different experiences. Obviously, through that time, I had a great deal of contact with the judiciary. And in 2013, after I retired from Anchorage Police Department, I was appointed by then-Governor Parnell to the Judicial Council. And I've been sitting on the Judicial Council under three different Chief Justices, Dana Fabe, Craig Stowers, and now Chief Justice Joel Bolger, for 6 years. It has been an honor for me to be able to serve the people of Alaska on this committee. The work that we do is extremely important. I think my commitment to seeing a fair and capable judiciary who will follow the law is what I have emphasized throughout my time there. And I'm certainly more than happy to answer any questions that any of the members might have.
Do any of the members have questions for Mr. Parker? Senator Schauer?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sir, do you, as you're looking at the applicants that would go through to potentially sit on the court, do you believe that they should recuse themselves from commenting on with the separation of powers between, you know, executive, legislative, and judiciary, should recuse themselves from commenting on for or against legislation? And then furthermore, especially if that legislation was to somehow affect the judiciary, do you believe they should what is your view of how they should conduct themselves in that regard of those separation of powers, if that question makes sense? And I apologize, I kind of stumbled through that a bit, but does that make sense?
Your question makes perfect sense. I have been thoroughly impressed with the slate of candidates that we have considered. And they have been very, very hesitant to speak of legislation, ongoing legislation, or even past legislation. What they have been willing to do is explain to them how they see legislation affecting the job that they will do. But I definitely am impressed with the fact that most of our candidates are very careful not to cross that line and to recognize the separation of powers.
You have a follow-up, Senator Schauer?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Parker, I want to say that I appreciate your willingness and your service thus far and your willingness to continue. I noticed your employment history, your background, your teacher turned pastor turned police officer, rather unusual route, but certainly gives you a depth and a breadth of experience. And could you speak to your experience and how it helps you fulfill your role on the council?
Certainly. I think we're all committed to the idea that justice must be tempered with mercy. And certainly that is one of the things that we look for in individuals who are applying for positions with a judiciary. I have had quite a few experiences. My wife and I started out teaching in Washington State, but quickly went to Yemen Arab Republic back in the 70s. And then we came back to the United States. I became an associate pastor and studied at Western Seminary in Portland, got my master's degree there, and then went back overseas to, first of all, France to learn French, and then the Ivory Coast. Then we came back to the States and then ended up back in France, of all places. And I think that has given me a great deal of experience in dealing with other cultures, in dealing with people that would have a different point of view than my own or the one that I have historically held. But also it has made it possible for us to have a vast number of experiences which have enriched our lives personally, just getting to know the folks from other countries as we have and live in those particular environments. It's been a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you. And I guess what your interest in becoming a police officer, I think, is what fascinated me. Your turn being a teacher and pastor And so yes. kind of across the spectrum, which really makes it for a very broad spectrum of experience as far as looking at who might be our judges in our state. What inspired you to become a police officer?
Well, there were a number of different factors. I always tell people that the Lord has a sense of humor. And also, I'm just helping people to see the error of their ways as a police officer a little more forcefully than I could as a pastor. But beyond that, we made that decision at a point in our life where we were in a church, a great group of people, but it just seemed like we were moved that direction, and I had applied at Anchorage Police Department thinking that I might become a chaplain, and they called me up and asked me if I would come to the academy. I gravitated almost immediately, well, 3 years in or so, to crimes against children, and became a specialist in that, and was able to reach out to a lot of hurting families, hurting kids, also in the area of sexual assault investigations. We have to work with a variety of people and try to understand their perspective, the difficulties that they're facing in their lives, and how that has affected them and gotten them into the position of victimization. So it was actually a pretty good background to go into police work, having dealt with people, dealt with their problems, dealt with counseling issues, those kinds of things that a pastor always does. And then be able to go out to the public at large and reach out to them and help them try to solve problems that they can't help, they can't perhaps solve themselves.
Thank you. And Senator Schauer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And she's absolutely right. Most of the time, police end up going into the, after what they've seen, it forces them to go into the seminary. So it is an odd course for you. I have a serious question for you. As you know, there's often the accusations, right or wrong, but in the press and other areas that we have judicial activism that takes place, and you can look back in the separation of powers between the executive, the administrative, and the legislative branches. Two of those are accountable to the people in the sense of we are elected and we can be fired. But as we are well aware, you can have a judiciary that really doesn't have the same process in that sense. So my question to you is, as we look at, as you are looking at the applicants as kind of that cross-check for us, the people, and looking at those that would be their records as you dig into those, and are you looking for, will you be willing to ask the hard questions about, you know, judicial activism versus interpreting the Constitution, specifically because you are one of our cross-checks and perhaps maybe the only real one, on the board for those that would move forward?
Yes, and that is something that is very dear to my heart. I believe that the separation of powers are constitutionally guaranteed to the public, and the judiciary definitely should not cross that line, neither should the legislative branch or the administrative branch, executive branch. However, that's one of the things that I listen for and I pitch in terms of questions when we're interviewing individuals, also looking at their background. We need judges on the bench who will follow the law, not make the law. And we've all been frustrated, I'm sure, where we thought that line was crossed, either federally or perhaps even in the state of Alaska. But that's hopefully something that we can impress upon our candidates, is that that is their job. Now, that having been said, you know that we do also review and evaluate the performance of judges and then recommend for retention or non-retention. And that is another one of those cross-checks that's very important, and I think the framers of our Constitution were looking forward very positively when they promulgated that law. So much of our job is looking at performance. We consider what police officers, probation officers, jurors, what other attorneys have to say about the performance of our judges. And it's on a regular basis. So different periods of time for that evaluation for the different judicial positions, but that's another cross-check and something that we take very, very seriously.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing any other questions, so thank you very much, Mr. Parker, for being available. And again, please stay on the line if you're able so you can through the public testimony. Next, we will hear from Jebediah Cox, who's being considered for the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar. The Alaska Bar Association has over 4,000 members. The bar is governed by a Board of Governors with 9 attorneys elected by the membership and 3 public members appointed by the governor. The bar is responsible to the Alaska Supreme Court for the admission and discipline process. The bar also provides continuing legal education and other member services. Mr. Cox, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Please place your name on the record and tell us why you would like to be placed on the board and how your experience will help you in that role.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Jedediah Cox, Anchorage resident. So it's a pleasure to speak to you, Senators. I'm humbled to be considered for the public seat on the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar Association. I thank Governor Delvin Levy, his staff, and you all for your service to our state as we transition into the future. I volunteered for this board because of the responsibility we have to remain faithful to the ideals of our predecessors, chief among those self-sacrifice and public service for the common good. I believe my experience makes me a great candidate for the board. I have been an educator for 10 years in public and private sector positions, domestic and foreign. The committee work I did for the University of Montana Academic Standard Review Committee, Montana State Office of the Commissioner of Higher Ed, General Ed Committee, and as a professor, gave me opportunities to work on state policy, university bylaws, and review academic performance. I bring with me those values upon which progress depends: honesty, hard work, courage, fairness, tolerance, patriotism, and the willingness to listen and learn. So thank you for your time and consideration.
And questions for Mr. Cox? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cox, so the Board of Governors of the Bar Association is responsible for setting the initial education and ongoing education duties, requirements for attorneys, and I notice you have some curriculum review background. Can you give us your thoughts on where we need to improve either the initial requirements or the ongoing education requirements for the legal profession?
Those always deserve a lot of time and scrutiny to see what is, to fully understand, what we're looking at for the future. So until I was actually get to talk with the other colleagues, I would like to wait to make any statement on what I think needs to change. That's a very complex, situation of what could be improved, what can change. That's not good. Like on the Gen Ed Committee for the state of Montana, it's similar to your Senate Bill 31. That took us 3 years to put together just because of the complexity of the education requirements, and that's just amongst the state of Montana itself. So that's a very, very long, complex question, and it deserves a lot of discussion amongst all the players, all the stakeholders, the universities, student bodies, student, the Bar Association, and the public, to get a full understanding of that.
Just a follow-up,
Senator Keel.
Sure, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the dedication to a thorough review. I think that's important. Generally speaking, just sort of trying to get a sense of your direction on the board, are we overly strict? We need to loosen things up? We got about right? Just rough approach?
I think Alaska falls in standard with much of the other states in the U.S. And with the reciprocity agreements, Alaska's quite reasonable. I mean, since we don't have our own law school, we allow quite a few the other schools come in, and then we have the uniform bar exam. So is that being part of the standard, I find Alaska to be quite reasonable. I mean, it's been under good. Yeah, they've been doing well.
Senator Michikee has a question for you, Mr. Cox.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cox. I notice from your application, it seems like that you're still an employee of the state of Alaska in community and regional affairs as a local government specialist. Is that the case?
That is the case.
I don't remember Mr. Cox, an employee, applying on a board, and I could be wrong, but this may be the first that I've seen that occur. Is that within the rules of serving on a state board?
I'd have to get back to you on that or defer to the chair.
Okay. You have a follow-up on that, Senator Mitchell?
No, I just like to know the answer. It seems, it's the first I've seen it. It seems strange. I know that we can't serve in some certain areas as having two appointed positions unless it's a duty of the legislature. So I didn't know if that was across the board or if there's a different set of rules, but I'd sure like to know.
And we will look into that, and we're making note of that, and we'll get back to the committee. So I guess a follow-up question to that, Mr. Cox, if we found out there was a problem and you couldn't be a state employee and take the position, would you be withdrawing your name for the position on the Board of Governors of Alaska Bar, or would you be withdrawing as a state employee? And if you can't make that decision at this moment, I would totally understand. So if you need more time to think about it, that's fine. But if you want to comment on it, please do.
Yes, I would. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would need more time to make that decision. I also see that it is a positive. For what I do, I'm a local government specialist, and I'm assigned to 53 communities at the moment. So, like, just the other day, I was able to, you know, with my contacts with these communities, pass on some FEMA information. So Krista and Deborah, who are a part of the Board of Governors, have been able to arrange for free legal assistance, pro bono, for low-income survivors of the November 30th earthquake, which is, you know, and that was something I was able to relay on to my communities, so we have a better spread of the word, so to speak.
Okay, thank you. Well, Senator Schauer, I almost said Mr. Schauer.
Mr. Works.
Mr. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Same question that I had for the previous applicant, but a little bit different because of the board you're applying for. But I'm interested in your view of the separation of powers, how you would approach that in that seat that you would hold, and knowing that, again, we give tremendous power to our judicial system and those in charge of it. That separation of powers constitutionally and the level of accountability that you would plan to apply, especially as you look at discipline and other things from your position, if you were to get it, what level of accountability are you going to demand and ask and bring to the table to ensure that that third branch of government is holding itself, to the highest standards? So the kind of that generic question constitutionally all the way down, if you could answer, please.
Yeah. So, a big part, other than checking, of course, the bar exam scores, is the disciplinary portion for the Board of Governors. And as an educator, I've always believed in being consistent and following the rules. You know, if there's an infraction of those rules, the procedure needs to be followed by the book. Especially with law, it's very important, that following those guidelines and the laws that were set down before us, as it is said, like the separation of powers, they're there for a reason and need to be followed, very strictly.
Follow-up, Senator?
Just so it's for the public record, are you willing to ask those hard questions? And again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot with it, just to know that, you as a member of that association and what responsibility is given to you, which is a great responsibility, are you going to be willing to ask those hard questions and hold people accountable? And I am merely asking that so that it is on the public record.
Yes, Senator. I'm very willing to ask those hard questions. I've been fortunate to have some great experiences. Even when I lived in South Korea, I was fortunate to work for the gentleman who became the head of the higher ed for the country of South Korea for a short time during his tenure at Weidong University. And we'd get to ask, we were able to actually ask those hard questions and make proposals because they are trying to modernize their education to be more in line with America. And it's been a great experience. Same when I was on the OCHE, the Office of Commissioner of Higher Ed, Gen Ed Committee. I was the lone student representative, surrounded by provosts and vice presidents. It was a great experience, but it was also, you see the need to stand up. My most proud moment was my ability to stop gen education requirements from being forced upon students that I felt was very short-sighted in the realm of a gen ed core curriculum.
Okay. I do have just a question that just sparks my interest. Ten years ago, you attended the Vietnam Banking Academy and then ITP. I'm not sure what ITP stands. Can you just tell us what that was and how long of an academy program that was?
Yes. So the Vietnam Banking Academy is just like a university. So it goes bachelor through doctorate, opportunities. And the ITP simply stands for International Training Program. So, of course, I was the English lecturer, and we did a little bit of business instruction there with our students. And that was it, yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, I don't see any other questions, Mr. Cox, so thank you for being with us today and for answering our questions and for being willing to serve on the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar. So next we will consider Mr. Trevor Shaw and his appointment to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. Alaska's Commission on Judicial Conduct was created by amendment to the state constitution in 1968. The commission is composed of three state court judges, three attorneys who have practiced law in the state for at least 10 years, and three members of the public. This group of nine individuals from differing backgrounds and geographical areas addresses problems of judicial conduct and disability. Complaints alleging judicial misconduct can be filed by any person. Mr. Shaw, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please place your name on the record and tell the committee why you would like to be appointed to this commission and how your experience will help you fulfill this role.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Trevor Shaw. I'm from Ketchikan, Alaska, and thank you to you, Madam Chair, and the other members of the committee for allowing me to testify today regarding my appointment to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. It's an honor to appear before you today telephonically. Just in short, I hope to kind of bring a unique quality perspective to the commission. I think it's important considering the commission was specifically constituted with the intent to incorporate diverse perspectives into the judicial conduct review process. You kind of mentioned it already in describing the commission. The intent of diverse perspectives on the commission was memorialized by the constitutional amendment mandate in Article 4, Section 10 upon the amendment and 1968 that the commission consisted of three persons who are justices or judges of the state court, three members who have practiced law in the state for 10 years, and three persons who are not judges, retired judges, or members of the state bar. And so in that spirit, as a public member of the commission, I hope to provide a positive contribution to the collective decision-making process with my qualifications and skills. My first experience with law, public policy, and public service began in the Ketchikan Youth Court when I was a high school volunteer for that organization. Youth courts in Alaska are a restorative justice program that allows minors who are convicted of a minor crime such as minor consuming alcohol, driving without a license, violation of curfews can be referred by district court or by local police departments through agreements, can be referred to the youth court programs to actually go through a process of where they appear before a panel of judges of their peers, and where the prosecuting attorneys and the defense attorneys are actually high school volunteers who have gone through a training process that results in an actual mock bar exam. And so, and then those juveniles who are who have been charged with those crimes go through that process, receive their sentencing based on a matrix that is outlined with aggravating and mitigating factors, and then ultimately, if they are able to successfully complete the program, and the youth court works with them to complete restitution, like letters to victims, collages regarding if it's, like, for example, a charge for minor consuming, what alcohol does to the adolescent body. And if they go through and complete their sentences, they receive a suspended imposition of the sentence, where that charge will not show up on their record, and so giving them opportunities in the future that they might not otherwise have had if they didn't go through the program. And so I was part of youth court through all 4 years of high school. I was later employed by the Ketchikan Youth Court as the assistant to the executive director, working with him in the administration of the program and helping those our clients, those juveniles who've been charged with such crimes, through the process. Served two terms as the president of the Youth Court Bar Association, and then during my last year of high school, I served as the co-president of the United Youth Courts of Alaska and the co-host for the annual Youth Courts Conference, along with the executive director. We hosted that conference here in Ketchikan. That same year, in 2013, as an 18-year-old high school senior, I was elected to the Ketchikan School Board. In 2015, Governor Walker appointed me to a 3-year term on the Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee, which I completed last year. In 2016, I won re-election to the school board, and my colleagues elected me as the president of the board, and I served 2 years as the school board president until 2018, when I departed from the board. In both youth court and the school board, there were quasi-judicial functions that those bodies exercised in youth court as an auxiliary to the judiciary, and working with those juvenile offenders who became clients of youth court as we worked to get them through that program so they could receive the SIS, suspended imposition of sentence. And then on the school board, quasi-judicial functions as it relates to disciplinary actions, not only for students, such as things up to expulsion, but also disciplinary actions as it relates to employees as well. And so in the private sector side, I have experience in public relations, project management, regulatory and compliance management, and finance and accounting. Currently, I'm employed as the administrative manager and director of government affairs for Ward Cove Group, the conglomerate of companies that are handling the development and economic revitalization of the former Ketchikan pulp mill industrial site. I'm also a partner in a small private holding company that likewise provides management and public relations consulting services. From my experience in both the public and private sector, I believe that I can bring to the table a thoughtful, well-rounded, open-minded approach to the decision-making process. I don't really have any agenda for my role on the commission except to do the job and do it well. The procedures and process for the role as a commission are well-defined and established. There's no need to really reinvent the wheel. The role of the commission being to ensure that there's public trust in the process and that the rules are being followed and upheld. The rules in this case being the Alaska Judicial Code of Conduct, Alaska State Statutes, and the Alaska State Constitution. Through that process, we ensure public trust in the process by displaying consistency and continuity in the enforcement of the rules. How the public perceives the work of the commission is ultimately half the battle, after all. Perception is reality. Ultimately, in between the appointment of judges and the first retention election, and we kind of heard about that a little bit earlier when Mr. Parker was testifying, the Commission on Judicial Conduct is sort of the first line of defense with regard to the public's oversight of the judicial system, if you'll allow me to use an analogy. At the end of the day, the work of the commission is the constitutionally prescribed checks and balances on the structure and separation of power in the state of Alaska. We need to know that the work is being done fairly and right, so it will hold up to the red face test in the arena of public scrutiny. I believe the commission fulfilled its role well. As a public member of the commission, I wouldn't be really looking to upset the apple cart or do anything drastic. I just hope to maintain steady consistency in the continuity in the commission's proceedings and work to guarantee that rules are being followed and that the judicial code of conduct, Alaska state law, and the Alaska state constitution are being strictly adhered to. Because after all, at the end of the day, all government really has is the trust of the people. And the commission, along with so many other boards and governing bodies in the state of Alaska, it's our job to ensure that that trust is preserved. So I hope that my background and approach, as I briefly described, can be a valuable asset to the invaluable work of the commission. The pursuit of public service, law, and justice is a lifelong passion of mine, and I would be truly honored to be able to continue that service for all Alaskans as a public member of the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And I would be happy to answer any questions that members of the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw, for stepping up and being willing to serve. You spoke well, and your resume shows that you do have an interest in public service. I appreciate your comments regarding the public trust, and I'd like to give you an opportunity in regard to ensuring that the public can continue to trust you. There's been some things in the media that have circulated regarding your stepping down from the school board, regarding, I believe it was not your pastor, but your parents' pastor. I would like just to give you an opportunity. I have a hashtag that I use on Facebook, hashtag telling it like it is. So I would like to give you an opportunity to speak regarding some of the things that have circulated. And if you believe you need to set the record straight, I'd like to give you an opportunity to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity. And there are two things I would like to address. And the first one is another accusation that's been made that I think is important to clear up before I move on to kind of the bigger one. There have been some comments made suggesting that during my time as the school board president, I would cut off citizens who are trying to address the board. And many people, as well as years of video footage, would confirm that this statement is simply not accurate. I actually received criticism from other board members in the past for not attempting to quote rein in citizen remarks. During busy meetings of the board, I had, at the request of the board, sometimes suggested time limits for comments. During other meetings, I would sometimes ask citizens to keep their comments to the topic at hand. However, I never cut anyone off to keep them from speaking. And as we talk about public trust and public involvement in the process, I thought that was an important aspect to clear up. Then to kind of move on to the next big accusation, in 2018, while I was still a member of the school board, there was a recall petition filed against me on the grounds of a procedural error alleging that I violated board bylaws by not allowing the student member of the board to speak when he sought to be recognized. The borough clerk certified the petition. That certification process has a low bar and includes a presumption that all allegations are then to be taken as true. It then remains the purview of the voters in a recall election to determine if they are in fact true. In June 2018, while the recall petition was being circulated for signatures, a longtime, well-respected pastor in Ketchikan, who was also the longtime high school culinary arts teacher, was arrested for sexual abuse of a minor. Some of this abuse allegedly took place in the high school in our district. This person had just recently retired from his teaching position. He was my childhood pastor, and my parents and siblings still attended his church at the time of his arrest. He officiated the wedding of my wife and I. The accusation being leveled against me is that I knew of his criminal behavior and allowed the abuse to occur. A number of the petitioners claim to have actual proof that I knew of the abhorrent acts of this pastor. This narrative enabled the proponents of the recall to gather enough signatures to put the recall petition on the ballot. Now those same individuals, as well as certain other media outlets, are saying that those are the reasons that the recall was brought forward and I was, quote-unquote, forced off of the school board because of it. I would like to take the opportunity opportunity to categorically and unequivocally deny those accusations as outright falsehoods. I learned of these atrocious acts in the same manner as the rest of the public when he was arrested and the charges were announced. This was a fierce betrayal to me and my family because he was indeed my former childhood pastor and did officiate my wedding. To add bitterness to that betrayal, we soon learned that his victims were close family friends of ours. However, there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that I had any knowledge of his behaviors or did anything to cover them up. There's no proof or evidence of that whatsoever. There are only rumors, innuendos, and gossip. It is true that I stepped down from the school board before the recall could go onto the ballot. The school board had just initiated its own internal investigation regarding the behavior and the acts of this pastor and this teacher. The criminal investigation was ongoing, and the intensity of the situation was at its height. I had a fiduciary duty to the board during the investigation, a pledge to confidentiality on the part of the school district, a commitment to the privacy for the sake of the victims, and the personal aspects of how this revelation severely impacted my immediate family and our close friends. In the end, all of these components took paramount priority, and I wasn't willing to compromise any of them to defend myself against a convoluted recall process. It wasn't what was right for the victims, the school district, the community, or my family. I ultimately resigned from the board for those very reasons, ending the process to put the recall on the ballot. Unlike what was portrayed, there was no salacious scandal, backroom deal, cover-up, or impropriety that caused me to resign from the board. It was simply the right thing to do to help begin to simmer down tensions in the school community and our community as a whole that frankly had been through enough. There was and still is a lot of healing in my community to recover from the situation, and in no way was I going to let any quote-unquote political considerations affect that. Senator Ted Stevens had a perfect saying to that point, to hell with politics, do what's right for Alaska. And people matter most in every situation. That was my mindset when I was first elected to office. That was my mindset during the tragedies of this situation. And it's still my mindset in the way that I approach public service today. People matter most. I always find myself trying to look back for the lessons in life and the opportunity for growth, no matter how bad a situation may be or how people try to spin it. In this situation, it's the fact that you don't know the truth until you do. In a role like that of the commission, it's important not to have any predetermined notions, and as someone who's been falsely accused of something serious, I know you have to approach each situation, each case, and each complaint that would come before the commission on its own merits and on the facts alone, and that not every accusation is true, and you really do have to take things on a situation-by-situation basis and look at them with an open mind, take in the facts, look at what happened in the situation, know that there's always two sides to the story, and really you don't know the truth of the situation until you do. And so, and it's not your job to assume the truth, but to learn it. And so I appreciate the opportunity to clear that up. Telling it like it is certainly something you'll get straight answers from me, and my life is an open book. And so that's the situation, and I outright deny every single one of those allegations, and I hope that my testimony provides some insight into how the process truly unfolded.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shaw. We're going to take an Addie's. We have a bit of a technical problem. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Do members have questions? Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we still have the echo?
Only
got it. Okay, I think we're okay. Mr. Shaw, the bar, as you mentioned before in the first technical, I believe is how you framed it, issue with the school board where they were initiating their process, seems like a pretty low standard as far as why you would want to remove somebody. My question centers on you just gave obviously a very long answer to those kind of two things that came up. Can you address the timing? And the reason I ask this is because it seems like one of those instances might, in normal circumstances, not have been enough to cause a recall and all of the things that seem to happen with it. It seemed like there's a lot at play for at least the first one, a relatively minor thing. So how far apart were these accusations, and is there more at play here as far as personal relationships or other things that are happening? Because I'm just trying to wrap my arms around, you know, why you would have what seems like a really large event taking place around this for at least the first event that seemed relatively minor. Could you address that?
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Through the chair, I wasn't the only member of the board who there was a recall petition filed against. By the time the recall petitions came forward and were put before before the borough clerk for review, we had been in the process, the school district as a whole, the school board, had been in very contentious negotiations with our local teachers union. And at the time when the recall was first filed, the other two recall petitions that were filed alleged that the grounds against the other two members were for a failure to negotiate on the part of the school district. The borough clerk ultimately dismissed those two petitions, saying that negotiation matters are a discretionary matter before the board. They are not something that is subject to being grounds for recall. And just to kind of outline that process a little bit more, the board as a whole was kind of looking at the financial situation of the state and saying, huh, things down the road could be a little uneasy and are not the most predictable, so we want to take a conservative approach to negotiations. And as the board president at the time, I had to accept direction from my board that was to maintain a conservative negotiating posture, which we did because that was the consensus of the board. And that resulted in a very prolonged negotiations process, and like I said, that ultimately resulted in recall petitions being filed against myself and two other board members, and the recall grounds being just different for those two other members, alleging a failure to negotiate when in fact there was never even a contract that was there was never even a tentative agreement that was able to be brought before the board before for consideration. The direction to maintain a conservative negotiating posture was from the board to our staff and our negotiator, and so there was never even any opportunity except for direction to them to have the opportunity to negotiate. At the board level, it really is just taking into consideration any TAs or other binding agreements that are brought before the board, and so that ultimately was kind of the issue at hand when all of this kind of exploded.
Senator Schauer.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. That was a long answer, but one of the things I was hoping to get from that is how long from one event being filed or complaint, I don't want to get the terms wrong, to the second one? Was it simultaneous, a week apart, month, months? What was it?
I don't recall using that word. I do not recall off the top of my head when the petition was actually filed and certified for circulation of signatures to when the arrest of this person was announced. The time frame for being able to collect enough signatures to be able to put it on the ballot is limited by statute, and so they're relatively simultaneous with each other.
Okay, thank you. Do members have any questions? Senator Reinbold.
So, first of all, Trevor, it is a big deal to me in regards to the high school student. I mean, as you know, he retired or quit basically just a few days before his arrest, and he did get 18 years. 6 years will be served in jail. He got 12 suspended because of, I guess he helped bust a vehicle theft ring, it looked like. To me, a recall is a big deal, and you claim that you departed, but you know that there's still a big red flag in regards to that whole issue there. We got numerous letters of concern, and I guess a couple of questions that I have for you is Did you fully hear the students out, and did you hear their complaints and address them when you were on the school board?
So, yes, I can, through the chair to Senator Reinbold. It's important not to associate those two, because the recall that was filed against me alleging that I did not allow a student member to speak was when that, it wasn't even this, what that student was trying to bring forward was he was trying to speak with regard to the appointment of a new member to the school board. It had nothing to do with any of the allegations against this pastor. And so the recall that was actually filed stating that I did not allow the student member of the board to speak is actually, and what the clerk was required to do was to presume it as true and put it before the voters. I did allow him to speak, but it was relating to a completely different issue where we were considering the appointment of a new board member to fill a vacancy, and it had nothing to do whatsoever with the arrest of this former teacher and pastor.
Senator Reinbold, you have a follow-up?
Yes. Okay, so basically, a question that I have is, did you have any complaints about Mr. Edwards while you were on the school board? Did any students, did anybody bring you concerns in regards to him? And if so, what did you do with those complaints?
There was never any complaint brought to me by a student, parents, staff, anyone regarding Mr. Edwards' conduct. Like I said, I found out just like every other member of the public when he was arrested and his arrest and charges were announced.
Okay. Follow up, Senator Reinbold.
Several of the letters in here state that they're very concerned that you don't bring anything to the table. This is a pretty serious, judicial conduct, and it's a pretty serious board. And just tell us why you think you're better than someone else for this appointment, because it definitely has caused me a lot of pause reading all these. Please do not confirm Trevor Shaw's appointment. A lot of letters from your community.
Yes, ma'am. And so through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I believe my perspective is something that I can bring to the commission. Like I said, with the requirement that there's designated seats set aside for attorneys, for judges, and then for members of the public, my entire adult life has consisted of public service, and I'm very proud of the accomplishments that I had during my time on the school board. And the process, I'll come back over the recall process in a minute and some of the letters coming in. Between my service on the school board, my service on the commission, the Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee, my service in the youth courts, my private sector background, my time in various volunteer, nonprofit, charitable organizations, sometimes this is a negative connotation, but being a millennial, I think kind of the perspective that I have as a younger Alaskan who has public service experience, who has business experience, who is a small business owner and manager, who has served on elected bodies, who has been a part of the judiciary and justice system, I think that's a valuable perspective that I can bring. And when I've talked to Governor Dunleavy about the appointment, when I've talked to the administration, that's always been the conversation of it's important to have a long-term, future-minded approach to some of these bodies. And another big thing is I've always, it's always been my pursuit to ensure that there is trust in the process. And so, that's something, even while I was on the board, even to my own detriment, I protected the interests of the school board. I protected the confidentiality that we were sworn to, even, like I said, to my own detriment, and made sure that the public involvement in the process was uncensored and unobstructed to ensure that people knew that the information was being heard and was being considered in the decision-making process. With regard to the letters that are going around asking that the legislature do not confirm my appointment. There have been several letters that I've happened to see that have come in from people who have known me for a long time, from local attorneys to members of the local tribal council, the local borough assembly, records that have come in from the time of when the recall was actually filed to what it was truly about. People who are able to look at my background, my relationships, my perspective, not from a situational approach of what happened at a very tense moment in time, and where, like I said, many of the allegations, all of them, are not true. And I'm able to kind of walk through this process, having had accusations been made, having allegations leveled against me that are very serious. And I, like I said, my life is an open book. The approach of being someone who's been falsely accused, I'm able to take the mindset of never take a situation for granted, never judge a book by its cover, look at the details, look at the people involved, look at the facts. How did it play out? What truly happened? Telling it like it is. And how does that play out in the situations, the complaints that the commission would be reviewing? And so that's a mindset that I would ask all members of the committee to take. And when you're talking to your colleagues, I would certainly ask that the approach and the message that you could spread. And I could go into as much more detail as needed to help alleviate some of those concerns regarding the arrest of this individual. But just, again, simply, I had no knowledge of his conduct. I found out in the press, just like everyone else, his victims, that he was arrested for abusing our family, friends of mine. I certainly would not by any means protect or cover up his actions. To begin with, let alone, like I said, adding the bitterness to the betrayal of the fact that this was my childhood pastor, but friends of mine, like girls who are like sisters to me, having been his victims, and then to say, oh, well, he knew. That's just simply not true. And so I would ask that you take my testimony into consideration when looking at these letters, and know that there are some very strong emotions from people who have read into a narrative or have a belief that a million times I could speak to it and say it's not true and that it's not accurate of what happened and how the situation truly unfolded. I would just ask that you take into consideration my testimony and look at the letters that have come in from people who know me, and then compare that with the letters that come in otherwise, and just take everything with a grain of salt. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to speak to, like I said, however much more detail you need. I'm an open book.
Senator Reinpol?
So I just wanted to say, Trevor, I do have reservations. Just too many red flags here. I will be thoughtfully considering what you've said, but I will be digging deeper, because I think this is a big board, a very, very big, very important to look at conduct. Judicial conduct, I think, is really, really important. And I think it may be premature for you at this time, but I thank you for putting your name forward.
Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shaw, thank you for your application. Sort of a question on how things proceeded within the school district while you were on the board. Were you involved in the board or the district's investigation of Mr. Edwards?
Yes, Senator Keel, through the chair. So when there was not too long after Mr. Edwards' arrest, and I don't recall specifically the time frame, there was a confidential complaint that was filed against members of the administration of the district, alleging that they knew of Mr. Edwards' behavior and did not follow policy procedure as it related to that situation. And so at the time, I was, of course, the school board president, and we have set policies and procedures, bylaws in place for how those complaints are set to come about. And so as that complaint was filed, we went through that process, went through trying to figure out who would be the best person to conduct a third-party contractor to be able to conduct that investigation, again, for perception purposes, and you want to ensure that there's trust in the process. And it was a very complicated process. Because of the victims being minors, there was incredible detail, attention to detail with regard to confidentiality and privacy. I disclosed to the board as soon as I knew the fact that I knew the victims personally, because I wanted the board to decide whether there was a conflict there. And then there were, on the opposing side, there were those who believed, those who thought that Mr. Edwards and I had a personal relationship, which we did not. I truly only spoke to Mr. Edwards when it related to whether or not, in his role as culinary arts teacher, he was going to bring halibut wraps to the school board meeting. And so there were questions on both sides, since I knew the victims and the board knew that I needed to recuse myself from overseeing that investigation. And there were questions from the side of the public saying, so, well, since he officiated over your wedding, you should recuse yourself. So ultimately, after we got through the process of meeting the timelines established in policy and bylaw for initiating an investigation, I turned it over to the vice president of the board to continue the oversight of that investigation.
Follow-up.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. And Mr. Shaw, you mentioned a third-party investigator. Did you have a personal or professional relationship with that third-party investigator as well outside the school board context?
I did not. The third-party investigator that was ultimately contracted with. So the board directed me in pursuit of a third-party investigator to contact the Association of Alaska School Boards to receive some insight on who could potentially oversee this investigation. They recommended a law firm. That was an initial route we looked at. Ultimately, that did not move forward because one of the other partners in the law firm had previously done work for the school district in the past, and so the board as a whole decided, well, we're not going to do that because it's important to ensure that for perception's sake, everyone truly recognized that this is a third-party investigator who does not have a pre-existing relationship with the district. And so there was the firm that was hired was ultimately hired just right at my time of departing, of stepping down from the school board, and that was done in conversations with an attorney that we hired from the district, hired from their insurance company. And so, but that was ultimately a decision that was finalized after I departed from the board.
And another follow-up, Madam Chair.
A short one. And Mr. Shaw, you could be concise with your answers. We are on a time clock, and we have another member who has a question. Senator Keel.
Thank
yes,
you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And thanks for that, clearing that up, Mr. Shaw. I guess the sort of 15,000-foot question, you've talked a lot about how important it is to bring out the truth and have the full process. But you also talked about how you did not want to go through the recall process of educating the voters. And so I guess as we look at the Judicial Conduct Commission's role in finding the truth and in upholding the integrity of the judiciary, how do you square those two?
Yes, Senator Keel, through the chair. So the shortest answer to kind of look at that is your commitment, the commitment that I had to the board and that I would have to the Commission on Judicial Conduct is the same, protecting and ensuring the interests of the Commission and what that body is prescribed with doing. And so in looking at the recall process and why I stepped down, I did not believe I could do the board, the district, the community, my family justice in how that situation was unfolding due to the fact that I had obligations to fiduciary obligations to the district, ensuring that it maintained confidentiality. And also there was an aspect that the public was worried about, is that whatever the school district was doing with regard to its own internal investigation could have an impact on the criminal investigation. And that's something that we wanted to avoid affecting. And so I looked at that and said, I don't want to have a conversation with the voters that is not going to be beneficial to solving this process. And so I weighed, is it more beneficial for me to fight the recall and stay on the board, or to allow the process to go unobscured, for lack of a better word? And so that was the approach that I took there. Obviously, it's a little bit different with the commission because it's not a directly elected position, and that conversation is happening now with this committee, and then working through the legislative confirmation process about that role and ensuring that I meet my obligations to the commission if I'm confirmed, and that's making sure that that role is upheld well. And so when I weighed those two, that's what I determined, is that it would not be beneficial for my obligation to the board, which I had sworn oath to uphold. It would not be beneficial to see the recall process through to the end for the reasons that I've mentioned.
Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. I'm kind of done the research on the report from about the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District investigation. Seems like you were on the board for all seven incidents. As a parent, I'm struggling on how the individual made it through report number two without losing his job, but there are some details here that are disturbing that were largely ignored. Even if the first incident, report number one in 2013, when it was not a student, however, in his classroom, by 2013, as a parent and a policymaker, this person should have been removed that day from his service and never allowed inside of an Alaska school again. As the reports continued and investigations continued, I wonder how many victims or how many additional young people were victimized by the district and therefore the school board essentially ignoring the repeated occurrences that happened in seven different incidents. So I guess the question I have is, what policies were being created by the school board while you were president to intervene in this situation? And it's relevant to my next question. So that's the first question.
Yes. Senator Michicki, through the chair. So first, when the school board initiated its investigation, and we asked the question because it was shocking and devastating to us, is how did this happen? We initiated the investigation after we were already working on it, then we received the complaint, and so then we had to follow timelines that were specified by policy. And that was the entire goal of the investigation, is because the first that we had heard of any misconduct whatsoever on the part of Mr. Edwards was at the time of his arrest. And so that immediately sparked a conversation at the board level of, when did this happen? How long has this been going on? And are there any more incidents? And ultimately what it came down to was a breakdown in what administration was telling the board with regard to Mr. Edwards' conduct and what was in his personnel file and what had happened. And so the board immediately, and that committee still exists even after my departure, there was a committee created, an ad hoc committee, to do a review of all the policy to figure out, okay, how can we tighten this up? Because obviously there was a breakthrough, even though the report says that overall policy was followed. Well, that's not a good enough answer, because people got hurt and this abuse occurred and we never want it to happen again. And so that's why the board moved in that direction. But truly the first time the board had any knowledge of Mr. Edwards' conduct was after after the arrest, and then the internal things, some of which are confidential, that took place from there, and has gone on since I've left the board. The board has been dealing with tightening up policy and procedures and changes in administration as well.
Okay, so I didn't get anything on the what policies. I mean, there's clearly a sophistication issue, particularly after Incident 7. The only he was going to continue through the end of the school year. Edwards was going to continue working through the end of the school year, which is fascinating. An answer I would have liked to have heard is we've created a system where people could anonymously provide a complaint to the school board, where there was a review that involved interviews with students and staff in all of the schools and the school board to see if there was other ongoing issues. Why do I ask that question? How can we expect, and I don't know you, Mr. Shaw, and I hope this doesn't sound unfairly negative. I'm looking at a report that's very disturbing. I have four daughters. How can we expect you to adequately provide processes to evaluate judicial conduct when we look at this failure and the intervention of obvious conduct issues at the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District?
Yes, Senator Michicki, through the chair, and that that did happen when all of this came out and we were dealing with the immediate aftermath. We said, all right, we're going to bring in a contract dean of students, someone who had been an administrator in the district years before and kind of served as a relief administrator, to come in, work outside the chain of command of the superintendent, the principal, the vice principal, to sit down with those people who had complaints, and to serve as, all right, this person is here solely for the purpose of, if you have anything at all, anonymously, you can send it in. There was an email address that was set up for that. There was the opportunity if you wanted to speak to the dean of students in person, and then all of his information, at least it was the intent at the time that I left the board, would be filtered on through directly to the school board outside of the normal chain of command, and that was to ensure that, okay, there was a definite breakdown, and that was unacceptable. And so what are we going to do in the meantime to be able to address that? And that was what was established and set into place. And there were people who did come and send reports directly to the board through the dean of students. And so what I believe that I can bring to the process of ensuring that the public is heard is there's a well-established complaint process. And you have to look at everything that comes in, even if it seems like, this raises some questions. And so I, as someone who's been through that process, I wanted to address all of these concerns because I think it's important whether or not, no matter how I feel about them, I think they're important to be heard and to be addressed. It should be like that with every complaint that would go to the school board and every complaint that goes to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And every complaint that goes through until the hearing is done and sanctions are recommended to the state Supreme Court, all of those details of the complaint remain confidential. And that's important. And because you want to protect those people, essentially you want to protect the whistleblowers no matter what the situation might be. And so that's something that we worked to do during the process of, it was kind of a crash and burn time. There was a lot of things going on. And so we said, okay, what's the immediate solution to make sure that this type of abuse, not in this situation because he's now been arrested, isn't continuing in the school district. And so that's what we did. And just to encourage, no matter how, even if a complaint may seem silly, you have to do your due diligence and go through the process because it's important to make sure that people trust the end result. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to hear all of the raw data and then go from there.
Senator Michicki?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Hi. I just need to clarify one thing on the record. I was actually referring to a drug theft, or excuse me, a vehicle theft ring with John Francis for getting a lower sentence. That actually, Mr. Edwards had six charges. It all got combined down to one Class B felony. He got 18 years with 12 suspended. He may be getting out with 4 years if he has good time. But I just wanted to make sure that the vehicle theft is actually for the next candidate, that that vehicle theft ring.
Thank you, Senator Reinbold. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. On actually a different topic, moving off of history, maybe something forward-looking. Mr. Shaw, you said in your earlier remarks, you were talking about your experience with quasi-judicial agencies and the duty of the Conduct Commission to ensure judges are complying with the Constitution, are complying with the statutes, and, of course, the Code of Judicial Conduct. And I wondered if you could give us some insight into what level of failing to comply with the statutes warrants what level of action by the commission, you know, recommending that the Supreme Court reprimand a judge, what level of not complying with the statutes warrants recommending the Supreme Court suspend a judge or even remove. Can you sort of shed some light on where you see that?
I certainly can. Senator Keel, through the chair. That's kind of one of those things where it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. What is the statute? And obviously, the statute translate in many cases will translate into the Code of Judicial Conduct, ensuring, I mean, certainly if, for example, a judge is charged with a crime or is being accused of a crime, and that's a complaint that comes through, that is all a violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct, but also originally is a violation of the Alaska state statutes that have been enacted. And so it just kind of depends on the situation and what piece of the Judicial Code of Conduct is applicable, and then ultimately what changes are made to statute, and then how that channels through to amendments and updates to the code of judicial conduct. It just sort of depends.
Sure.
Thank you. And Senator Schauer has the final question for you this afternoon, Mr. Shaw.
Mr. Shaw, so you opened up something a little earlier. I'm going to go step back about your what happened. And so one of the things you talked about, there was dealings with the school administration, with third party, with outside or potential outside legal representation. So there was a lot of things taking place. And it kind of relates back to what I asked before about it seems like there was kind of a, for so many things to be happening, like there was initial a low bar set up on that technical as you started the conversation for where things had begun with this kind of overall recall effort. But several things that have been asked for questions, which other committee members have been, kind of pointing to. I'm curious, was there any, in your dealings with the schools itself, the teachers, et cetera, was there any organized opposition to you as this was taking place? And I'm talking about because there were so many organizations involved, was there an organized opposition, or was there something from an outside group that came in this legal part of it? Because again, I go back, I'm trying to wrap my arms around how so many things took place other than what Senator Reinbold and Machika were discussing, specific issues of the accusations. That's obviously very serious, and trying to answer why that would happen. But I'm just curious, was there more taking place with bigger groups or opposition that came into this at the end? Because it just seems how the whole thing took place. And I don't want to go into a rambling question because I'm trying to get, there's so many parts and pieces to this and some long answers. So I'm trying to pick out the pieces that matter to me to get an answer. So just to frame that again, was there organized opposition to you in this case or other groups that came in? If you could answer that as far as this process played out.
Certainly, Senator Schauer, through the chair, and as Senator Reinbold and Machika also have questions, I've been kind of taking notes on some of what those were, and I will be providing some written testimony as well because they are very important questions, and I'll be sure to provide that through the chair. With regard to your question, how this originally started as being about contentious union negotiations, the folks who would testify in front of the school board in opposition to the negotiating posture of the district, to my leadership of the district because of those negotiations, clearly followed the trend. Those folks, as soon as the Edwards arrest occurred, they transitioned from talking about negotiations to making the allegation and the rumors and the gossip that I somehow knew about what was going on with that situation. And many of those same folks have written me letters and sent me emails and have provided information to the Landmine political blog and have provided information to the Midnight Sun and are, like I said, on social media, again, talking about those things. And so it is a concerted effort, and it goes all the way back to the tense union negotiations and the posture that my board directed me as the school board president and the administration and our negotiators to take. And so that certainly was an organized effort, and there are a lot of other falsities that went along with this, everything from pictures being taken alleging that myself and two other school board members were having an illegal meeting when, in fact, it was me hiking with my longtime friend who happened to be a school board member and his wife. And so they started spreading those rumors as well, and when we were able to point out, no, in fact, that wasn't true, it was interesting to see how quickly things would disappear and they would move to the next tactic.
Thank you, and I mentioned that Mr. Schauer's question was the last one, but what you just stated prompts one more from me, and that is you mentioned that after those union negotiations is when things seemed to ramp up in opposition against you. What occurred in those negotiations? I mean, what was the outcome that you're seeming to indicate those people were opposed to that outcome?
Ultimately, the outcome is all of the members of the board that they believed opposed their negotiations are no longer on the board, have lost re-election, have stepped down due to other issues themselves, opposition to how things have been handled after the last municipal election. A contract was ultimately ratified in last year after the municipal elections and after a new board was seated.
I apparently didn't make my question clear. In the outcome of the union negotiations, did this have to do with teachers' salaries particularly, and did they not receive raises, and was that, do you think that is the root of the beginning of some of the opposition? I'm just trying to understand it. If you could please respond.
Yes, it certainly would be the beginning route. Not zero raises, but a conservative raise over a period of a 3-year contract. I can't remember the year-to-year amount, but that's certainly how it started. Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And Senator Michicki, are you wanting one more question?
One more brief statement, Madam Chair.
Okay, go ahead, Senator Michicki.
I'm a conservative Republican that evaluates things on face value. I just wanted to make sure that no matter what the attacks were, and I hope that wasn't the case, that my questions, and I know that's not why you ask that, come off of a piece of paper where I don't know how many young people were victimized because of the inaction of the school board that was led by Mr. Shaw. Mm-hmm. So I, whatever else happened, and I know those things happen, right? We see them every day. My concern was isolated to this specific issue. So I just wanted to clarify that. Politics are ugly and unfair. My questions were about something else.
Yeah, thank you. And we had a situation in a Mat-Su school district where it was alarming how something went on, and so it is important to get to the bottom of these things. Thank you very much, Mr. Shaw, for hanging with us and responding to our questions. Next, we are going to go to our last appointee for consideration today, and we are close to time. I found out from one member that it's okay to go past 3 p.m. Senator Reinbold, I didn't see your note back. So
yeah, until 10 minutes after I said.
Okay. And Senator Michicki, do you have flexibility to stay?
Madam Chair, I'm looking.
Senator Keel.
I think I can leave with Senator Reinbold. We have resources.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll try to just go through this quickly. And Senator Michicki, it appears he can stay a little bit. So Mr. John Francis is being considered for appointment to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. That board was established to help mitigate financial losses that are the direct result of violent crimes that occur to Alaskans and visitors to Alaska. In addition, the board helps to foster victim advocacy and services and promotes victim recovery. So, Mr. Francis, would you please state your name for the record and tell us why you'd like to serve and what your experience, how your experience will help you fulfill that role?
Sure. Thank you, Senator Hughes. I'll make this quick. I moved to Alaska in 1999 after rediscovering my high school sweetheart, Sherry, moved here in 1983. Our three adult children and five grandchildren all continue to live here. I'm a member of the United Protestant Church in Palmer, which is the original Church of the Colonists. I've also owned Matsuth and Pitamedics in Wasilla since about 2002. I'm the founding administrator for the Facebook anti-crime group Stolen in Alaska and Mat Valley Crime Discussion. I started these groups because there was no easy source for my computer repair business to quickly verify if computers brought in for password resets were stolen or not. I was told by the troopers that if I called in with a serial number, they might get back to me within a week. So I started the crime groups to have an open source for people to discuss and post stolen items. These groups also help keep the public informed of who the local criminals are. As groups evolved and my business grew, victims of violent crimes began reaching out to me through Facebook and in person. Most victims of violent crimes understandably do not feel comfortable speaking publicly about the effects violent crime has had in their lives. It frustrates me that there's very little I could do to help them other than to be supportive, although I have helped them build bridges to people I have come to know in law enforcement, the legal system, and even into the political arena. I've been asked why I want to serve on this board, and the answer is simple. I'm passionate about helping people, especially those struggling to recover from violence against them or a loved one. Violent crimes affect the entire family. Almost to a fault, I'm compassionate, but I have acquired a great instinct over the years from managing over 200 employees, having thousands of customers, and raising three teenagers into adults. I can sort out the truth and who's embellishing on their situations. Thank you so much for considering me for this position. I would love to have the opportunity to be a part of helping people that have been victims of unspeakable crimes.
Thank you, Mr. Francis. Are there questions? Senator Reinbold.
So, John, I just have several concerns. First of all, can you state if you had any paranormal experiences? I found several things on you, an ADN all over the place, and I just that's a red flag. If you could just explain if you've had any paranormal experiences.
I did have an experience when I was in the Coast Guard in, I believe it was 1982 in Manistee, Michigan, where a man died in my hands. And it's a very personal experience to have somebody die on you. And it changed my life forever. One of the things my wife and I started doing about 10, 15 years ago was we created a small group with some friends that went around and investigated so-called paranormal places, you know, graveyards, stuff like that. But we weren't some one of those crazy groups you see on TV. We used scientific methods to do our research, you know, voice recorders, stuff like that, so we could try to capture realistic voices. And we've had actually some decent results with that. But and I have been on TV, Alaska Haunting. There's a show we did three episodes with them on Destination America. And the group's pretty much inactive now. Has been for three or four years.
Senator Rainbow?
So can you describe this experience? Did you see a body came through you or something when this person died in your arms in the Coast Guard? I'm trying to get to the bottom.
No, I didn't. It was more of a spiritual experience. I didn't see anything, nothing like that.
Okay, so...
Follow-up, Senator Rainbow.
So ghost tours of Anchorage, do you have any connections or links with them?
No. No, none whatsoever.
Okay, can you tell us about...
Follow-up, Senator Rainbow.
Can you tell us about your Alaska ghost hunters? There are several things in regards to haunted locations and spirits, and spirits are once living people, and... Talk about ghosts and all that kind of stuff. Can you get into the details, including the Fourth Avenue Theater?
I'm sorry, I missed that last part. The 4,000 what?
The Fourth Avenue Theater.
Oh, the Fourth Avenue Theater. There is a list of supposedly haunted locations that we post on our website. But most of the activity is reported there, and nothing we've experienced.
So basically, I'm asking you to describe Alaska ghost hunting. Yeah, you list several different locations, including the Fourth Avenue Theater here. Tell us about this. This, to me, is very serious because this is part of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. I want to know, do you believe you can talk to the dead?
No.
Do you see spirits? No. I mean, I'm trying to get information, or do you believe, because you say you use investigation processes, recording, you say you can sort the truth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This isn't just, I just don't want you just to glaze over this. This has been brought to me by multiple constituents, multiple people are very, very concerned about this. So if it's serious, if it's just for fun and all make-believe, tell me that. If you're serious and there's investigative process and you believe this is real, I want to know that. But I really don't want you to glaze over this, because I think this is a real serious concern.
Okay. I can go into depth on how we do investigations, if that might help. What we do is we go into people's homes that are experiencing so-called paranormal activity. And what we do is we set up microphones in each room and video recorders with each doorway in clear view. And then after we get done investigating, we go and we review that evidence. And many times what we'll do is somebody will hear a voice in one room. And so we'll go back and we'll check the other recorders in all the other rooms. And almost all the times, it is something explainable, such as a tire squealing at a stop sign. It might sound like a child's voice. And to tell the homeowner that what they're hearing in the middle of the night is not paranormal, it's something that's clearly explainable, and it puts them at ease.
Senator Reinbold,
so do you believe in paranormal activities? And if so, can you describe what they are?
I believe there is a Jesus Christ, and I believe he did rise from the dead.
Okay, Senator Reinbold, if you could wrap up with one more question on this one so we can get to other matters, please.
So do you believe that there is haunted locations?
Yes, and I also believe that there are people that, for one reason or another, when they do die and they see the light, and they're wanting to go to light, but they're in fear of being judged for something, they may stay behind and never go towards the light.
Final closing comment.
Okay, comment, Senator Reinbold.
So basically, John, I think these people are with violent, this is a Violent Crimes Compensation Board. This has raised considerable, I've done a considerable amount of looking into things and links and where linked to and some of your activities. I think this is the wrong board for you, and I'm going to make very clear that I will be a no vote.
Okay. Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Francis, because the board deals with victims of crime, let me ask, do you have a criminal history yourself?
When I was late in high school, I got involved with the wrong people. It was the worst time in my life. But I got myself away from those people. I'm moving away. So yes, 40 years ago, yes.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Francis, was there, I guess, two follow-up questions.
Sure.
Was there any violent element to any of the things for which you were charged?
Absolutely not.
And second follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Because the board deals with compensation and often compensation for insured losses, was there any insurance element to any of the things for which you were charged?
There was an insurance fraud.
Okay, may I ask, Madam Chair, would you describe that for the committee, please?
If I can remember correctly, I had some stuff stored in my house, and it would belong to a friend, and he arranged to have it stolen while I was at work and filed an insurance claim against it.
Senator Keel?
Thank you. And Mr. Francis, just to make sure I heard you right, what was the time period, did you say?
I want to say that was in 1982, 1983.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Francis? I have a question, Mr. Francis. It's been a bit muffled, so I'd have a little bit of trouble hearing you at a few points, and I do have a little bit of a hearing problem. Were you a victim of a crime, and that is why you started the Facebook groups that you did? And also, can you tell me how many people are members of those pages, please?
I believe the total membership between the two pages is about 20,000 people. I was a victim of a burglary years ago, just prior to my moving up here. I was robbed. Put some stuff up for sale on Craigslist. Somebody got my address, came back, and cleaned me out. My ex-wife was molested by her stepfather. That didn't come out till we were married. And when he came back into her life. And so I feel very deeply, I guess, about crimes like that.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other questions, so thank you very much, Mr. Francis, for being available and for responding to our inquiries. We appreciate your willingness to step up and serve. Senator Machicki has the look on his face that I better make sure he doesn't have a question. Senator Machicki.
The criminal activity from the past was not clear to me. I don't know if it was clarified to anyone else. I'd like to understand that just a little better. Could you please, you talked about a bad crowd and you talked about some things being removed from a house, but I'm not sure I understood exactly what happened.
There were two crimes. One was a burglary. The bad apple in our crowd, I helped rob his neighbor's house. And the second crime was an insurance fraud that took place in a mobile home I owned. They were probably a year from each other.
Okay.
Do you have follow-up, Senator Machicki?
No, I think that's fine. It wasn't clear to me earlier exactly. Okay. So thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. And at this time, we are going to open public testimony on these candidates. Public testimony is open. I'm not seeing anyone that has signed up. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify regarding, please approach the table, Mr. Landfield, and state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Jeff Landfield from Anchorage, in Juneau for a while. I wasn't planning on testifying, but after Mr. Shaw referenced my website, I wanted to clarify I was not contacted by any union members about his behavior or about what happened. KRBD and Ketchikan widely reported what was going on. I heard about it from some people, so I started looking into it. And I, you know, there were some things on Mr. Shaw's behavior on the school board. And July 30th at a meeting, he initially tried to hire the same firm that was already representing the school district from Anchorage, which several parents pointed out as strange. And then at an August 8th meeting, and this is on video, you can watch it on the Ketchikan School Board website, he refused to recuse himself from the investigation, and only after parents made very clear how inappropriate they thought that was, and he was very rude to them. You can watch the video. He eventually decided to recuse himself. So nobody approached me, no union agenda or vendetta. I heard about this like a lot of people did, and it was widely reported in the Ketchikan media, and I did a story on it. So I want to clarify that based on the comment he made.
Thank you, Mr. Landfield, for your testimony today. Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm checking again online and not seeing anyone there. So with that, we will close public testimony. But before I do, I want to mention that people are welcome. Those listening or in the room can submit written testimony to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. So closing public testimony. All right. So seeing we will move on. In accordance with AS 39.05.080, the Senate Judiciary Committee reviewed the following and recommend the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Alaska Judicial Council, Dave Parker. Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar, Jebediah Cox. Commission on Judicial Conduct, Trevor Shaw. Violent Crimes Compensation Board, John Francis. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the... Actually, you know, we're not going to do that. We are going to go ahead and adjourn because we do not have time, obviously, based on the clock, to start digging into the remainder of SB 34. So I think I have an announcement I need to make really quick. I'm just looking here, jumping ahead. Yes, I want the public and members to know that on Friday, this Friday, March 8th, at our 1:30 p.m. meeting, we will finish up the sectional SB 34, and we also will take public testimony. So seeing no other business before the committee, before we adjourn, I'm going to let Senator Machicki make a remark and ask members to please stick around to sign the paperwork. So, Senator Machicki.
Brief at ease, Madam Chair.
We're back on the record and just had a good suggestion from Senator Machicki that because we need the response regarding Mr. Cox and whether he can be a state employee and also serve on a board, we don't have that information. We also, because we went over, we've had two members leave. So what we're going to do, instead of signing the paperwork, we will do that at likely at the Friday meeting. So with that and no other business before the committee, we will adjourn at 3:16.